I would like to give you an update on my progress of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Okay.
So, I played this game for 50 hours. And
okay.
I had to put it down.
Okay.
So
after 50 hours.
After 50 hours. I really, 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 really like this game. The problem I had was that I'm at, like, I think an important part of the game is like a boss fight, and I just can't do it. Like, I genuinely don't know how to defeat this boss.
Huh.
And it feels like...
And it's not the final... It's like the final boss of this
game. I don't think it's the final boss. And the reason I think that is because every time I thought this game was going to end, it keeps going. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think there's something like 15 chapters of this game, which is what something like that, which I found out. At the end of what was chapter 8, I was like, oh, that's the end now. I was like, oh, no, it just keeps going. Like, there is genuinely a point in this video game where it's like, okay, we're starting a new game now. And I'll tell you right now, boys, it's not the one you're thinking of. This game is mad. Like, it just never ends. And I have this feeling where I'm feeling a bit guilty in a way, which is like, oh, I put all this time in and I'm not finishing it. But I think the only way that I can see to do what I need to do is to grind. And I don't want to do that. Like, I've put so much time into this game. And also, it's like, whenever you get to like this pivotal point in the game, it's like, to proceed, we recommend you're at this level and your weapons are at this level. And every time when I was in the game and I was at that point, I just breezed through. But in this particular boss fight, I was at the levels that it told me to, and I'm having my butt handed to me.
Huh. So, like, do you think you got to do more grinding or side quests?
I don't. I can't work out what it would be. Like, maybe I'm just like, I'm not playing the game well enough, but the only thing that I like, you know, maybe there's some tactical strategy to employ that would help me through this point, and I just don't know what it is. So the only thing that I can think of is I would need to just grind it. So my plan right now is I've just left it as it is, and maybe at some point, like, I will be out of games and over the next couple of months, which is very possible looking at the release calendar of this year, and I might go back because I have had a fantastic time with Infinite Wealth and do really, really recommend it. Because even if you only play for 20 hours, you're going to have a good time. Like, I would say as well, like, maybe 10, 15 of my hours was just on Dondoku Island, which you don't need to put the amount of time into that part of the game that I did. Like, I finished that entire part of the game. Like, there's an end point, which you can carry on going, but there is like a story end point, and I did that, but you actually didn't need to do all the way to the story end point. You can leave at any point, but I wanted to see it through, and I liked that part a lot. And so, like, so maybe I'll come back to it. If I don't, I'm planning to just watch, like, a playthrough at the end of the game, because I genuinely want to know how the story ends. And I guess the other thing that I'll say about this game, it's kind of a storytelling triumph. So I'm going to be very loose here. Spoiler wise, but you know, if you really don't want to be spoiled at all on this game, then just jump forward a few minutes. But you play as two different characters in this game, and it feels to me like it's the end of one character's story. Like, that's the way it feels like it's been set up. But also, this character is like has been in these games forever. Like, you know, like all of these different Yakuza or Like a Dragon games. And I've never played any of these before, but they do such a good job in telling the story that I feel sad and nostalgic about the fact that this character might be retiring, even though I have no attachment to this before. And like, they're showing you all these things, and like, there's this whole part of the game where you can like go up and collect these memories, and it levels you up if you do that, so there's a good reason to do it. And it shows these memories of things that this character experienced in the past, and there are also some story stuff to it. And they tell it in such a way, and it's done so succinctly, that I feel like I understand what's going on. So the storytelling of this game is very, very, very good. The two characters is also like a really good, like, especially like there's a part in the game where you're playing as one, but both characters are there, and then the characters split from each other, and that's where like the game feels like it starts over again. And the mechanic that they then have of like moving from one character to the other, like I genuinely like, you know, I see a game like this, it's like, I don't know how they, I feel like it's like in the way that games are made today, it's almost like, how on earth did it not take 15 years to make this video game? And I do think one of the ways, this game looks really good, but it doesn't look like realistic in a sense, yeah. Right? And I think that that's one of the ways that they've handled this. Like, for example, it looks really good, but it doesn't look as good to me as Baldur's Gate does, right? And or like it looks really good, but it doesn't look as good as Spider-Man does, right? And so I think that that might be, like, whilst it looks great and the cutscenes look great, it's still got, like, a video game look to it. And I think that that is probably one of the things that has helped the team make this game within what seems like a relatively okay time frame, especially since like there was also a Like a Dragon game last year. Like, so yeah, but anyway, I really recommend it. But I put it down and I've immediately picked up Balatro, which is how I keep saying it. Federico, how should I say it?
Balatro. Yeah.
This game,
it's so good.
Is incredible. Ostensibly, it is a poker roguelike. That is the way to describe this game, but you don't need to know how to play poker to play Balatro. It does a very good job of teaching you the basics of the hands, but you can play four runs of this game and win just playing pairs. So anyone can work out what pairs are. And ostensibly, the way it does this is you get buffs on each run. These buffs take the form of what are called joker cards, and they can manipulate the scoring of your hands. And every game that you play, there are kind of like three games per ante. An ante is essentially a level. You have eight levels to beat the final boss of each run, and then your run is complete and you can continue playing endlessly from that point. But a quote unquote run in Balatro is eight rounds of three games. And you know, you can play through and you get a score. You have a score you have to beat in each game to then advance to the next game and into the boss. And, you know, you do this like eight times in a row of three. And your score is manipulated by the joker cards. So you might play... Yeah. Also, each hand type you can level up as well. So, for example, I'll just throw this out there. Say you want to play a pair. A pair might be you get a score of 20 and a multiplier of 2, let's say. But you can level that up. So you could end up getting a base score of 40 and a multiplier of 4. But then the joker cards can manipulate both the score and the multiplier of the score. So it sounds quite complicated when you describe it like that, because there's a lot of numbers and variables, but the game is pretty simple. But then you can lay, the more you play it, the more you can adapt those numbers and continue on. Like, as well, like each run, you can unlock new decks, and those decks also have base modifiers to them. I've beaten 4 runs now, I think. And I'm nice. Playing with different... Yeah, it feels really... And it's great. Like, but this game is like so fantastic. It's so... But it's also so crushing. Like last night, I'm playing on a deck that's pretty hard right now because the decks have modifiers to it, and I'm trying to win a run on this deck. And I got up to the 7th round and I was having a great time, and I built my jokers to manipulate the cards in a certain way. And again, I got to the final boss, and the boss has a modifier on it, and the boss's modifier effectively made sure that I scored nothing. Yeah, just
that
nothing.
That happens.
And so then I'd lost and I'd start all over again. But I absolutely love this game. It's got such a great aesthetic. The music's really good. And it's just another of these success stories that I feel like in the last 2 years is happening more and more and more. That, like, this is a game that started to gain some steam in like the gaming media. And then it sold like a million copies in like a month. And it's coming to iOS and Android too now, they've announced. Obviously because they've made like a buttload of money, right? So like they're able to expand the game. And this feels like a really great potential for a mobile game too. Like it feels like it could, you know, I think it's on It's on everything, right? It's on, I'm playing it on Steam Deck, but it's on Switch. It's on all the consoles. And I think it would make it would be it could be ported very nicely to iOS. You know, really, if you're Apple and you're not trying to sign it to Apple Arcade, I don't know what you're doing. Because like this also just feels like a really good Apple Arcade game. It fits with a lot of the types of games that they like, and it will cost Apple nothing. I feel like in a way, you know, like what I mean is sometimes I feel like these deals are helping the developer create their game, right? Well, this game is already made. It just needs to, like, a lot of the development time in the sense of coming up with the idea, coming up with the mechanics, that's all done. Now it's just a case of how do we get this to fit on an iPhone, which I feel like the development expense would probably be less. And also, this company has so much money, maybe Apple just needs to give them a very good sweetheart deal on it on the other end. But yeah, because this fits very nicely into what I imagine a good Apple Arcade game could be. But yeah, I will say right now, if Balatro is not my game of the year, then a killer game is coming this year that I don't know about.
Yeah. I mean, this is also something that I've been playing on my Nintendo Switch. Not as much as you, just because I've been busy with other games.
Yeah, I'm like 20 hours into this, by the way.
Yeah, nice.
I've been like blasting it. I'm having a great time.
I do think if I were Apple, I would totally try and everything I could to sign this game and have the developer work on a mobile version that is optimized for portrait usage, which is sort of something that I've seen. Have you seen this roguelike that launched on iOS, Slice and Dice, I believe it's called, on the iPhone?
Oh, I downloaded this. Yeah? I've played one game of it so far. I feel like I need to play more, but yeah, I've seen that.
Nice. Yeah, and that game has, like, the UI is optimized for landscape mode and portrait mode, which is something very interesting. I will, like, right now, Balatro is obviously something that you play in landscape on, you know, on a Nintendo Switch.
I feel like they have to build a portrait version.
They have to build a portrait version, so that will be interesting. But I do think that it's such a perfectly balanced game that ostensibly looks like a poker game. It's not really about poker. It just uses the cards from poker as a sort of gameplay mechanic, but it's not really about the game of poker. And how the game has this constant push and pull, right, between making you think that you have understood the game and then constantly sort of appending the rules and introducing new factors to consider. I think it's so expertly well done. It's a pleasure to play and something that sort of involves that part of my brain that makes me feel challenged and good at the same time.
Yeah,
it's a game that makes you feel good. So
Slice and Dice, I'm looking into. I wanted to play because basically a bunch of people I follow on social media, like Zach Gage, are like, "Yeah, this is a game, right?" Like, and people whose game taste, like game people in the games making world, whose taste I like, are saying, "Yeah, no, this is really good, Slice and Dice." Yeah. So, and yeah. I'm looking into that too.
Yeah. All right. So. Let's see. I've been playing some games. I've been busy with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
What are you thinking of Rebirth so far? I know you were pretty excited about it, and I feel like reviews seem to have been good but mixed.
Yeah. So it's a lot more gamey than the one before, in the sense that this is a game that uses the universe and the story of Final Fantasy VII. And sort of infuses that with the modern Ubisoft style open world shenanigans, right? So that's why the reviews have been mixed. There's a lot of side content in this game. Like, look, there's a lot of filler content, right? There's a lot of like fetch quests and you get assigned all this additional like world intel mission by Chadley. This Chadley dude was not in the original Final Fantasy for PS1, was introduced in 7 Remake, but it was sort of like a side character. It wasn't really... It was the character that assigned you like the VR simulator if you wanted to simulate fights against summons and sort of to practice. Now Chadley has become this like omnipresent entity in the game that rings you on your phone and then asks you to complete side quests. And when I say there's a lot of open worldy filler content, like there's a lot of it, but I don't mind it because the thing is, the game is so beautiful and it sounds so amazing. And the constant sort of banter between the characters, it's such a pleasure to play. Like the fighting system has been refined and it's more fun than before. The game looks amazing on a PS5. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot more open worldy than before. You can, for the most part, ignore all the open world stuff. It put me off a little initially. I was like, what is this? But then the more I started doing it, I 100%ed the first area. And I'm a chapter 4 or 5 now. So I'm taking my sweet time with it. But I'm doing all the open world stuff. Because I actually, like, I find it strangely relaxing. Hanging out, I think this game is a lot better than the first game when it comes to being like a hangout video game. Like, you can just put it on, knock off a couple like of side missions from your log, from the world map, you know, hang out with the characters, level up a bunch, and obviously doing all the side quests also carries the benefits of you're raising your party level, and by raising your party level, it means that you get to unlock more skills. And I'm taking my time with the story because I just like hanging out in the open world so much. And that made me think that one of the things that never resonated with me when I tried open world games before, like from Ubisoft, of course, like the Assassin's Creed games, but also like the Horizon games. The thing is, when I don't care about the characters or the universe or the story, right, I also don't care about the open world nature of the game.
Sure.
And so the reason why I didn't mind, you know, the open world stuff in Zelda, both Breath of the Wild and even more in Tears of the Kingdom, and I don't mind and I actually like the open world stuff here, is that I care about the world, I care about the story, and I enjoy the characters. So I think that's something I realized with this game. And yeah, I mean, the fighting system is super fun, and I'm about 20 hours in, and I'm really, really enjoying this game. Then I've been playing Balatro, and you know, I don't really have much else to say than what you said, Mike. And a recent experiment, which is something that I set up and that I think I'm going to set aside and just you know, enjoy after Final Fantasy VII, is after 13 years, I've been playing Skyrim. I'm finally playing Skyrim on my Steam Deck. I, for many reasons at the time, in 2011, I never played Skyrim. I always wanted to, and I never did. And now I figured, you know, let me just see what Skyrim looks like. And I set it up with mods on the Steam Deck, and you don't need to install, like I've been hanging out in various subreddits, and there's people who have like 700 mods installed for Skyrim. This, for context, is the most popular game, I guess, of all time that Bethesda ever made, and it's part of the Elder Scrolls series of role-playing games. Bethesda is working on the Elder Scrolls 6 game, which they have teased before. Skyrim is the Elder Scrolls 5. And before Skyrim, there was Oblivion. And before Oblivion, there was Morrowind. And the first two, I don't remember the names. So anyway, Skyrim, incredibly popular, has been released on literally every console ever made. There has been a special edition, an anniversary edition, a VR edition.
There was an Amazon Echo edition.
It's on the Nintendo Switch. It was actually part of the original Nintendo Switch announcement in 2017. Oh, you can play Skyrim on the go. That was one of the things about the Nintendo Switch in 2017. Anyway, I haven't installed 700 mods. I've only installed 5. And let me tell you, if you install just enough mods to make Skyrim look better, it looks fantastic. Like up-res textures, better UI, better face models, like that's enough. You can make Skyrim look like a modern game. And I played for a few hours, and I gotta tell you guys, like, I understand now, I think, why Skyrim is still consistently in the top 20, I believe, most sold games on Steam every year. Because from the get-go, the freedom and the sense of immersion that this game makes you feel, I've only felt, I think, with Zelda. And I understand now why, at the time, the, you know, Nintendo said and the Zelda developer said we were inspired by Skyrim. Like, I can see a thread now between Skyrim and Breath of the Wild. That sense of immersion and the sense of like, oh, you see something, you can go over there. It's incredible. And yeah, I think I want to set this aside, finish Final Fantasy VII, and then really dig in. Because, wow, like, I played on the Steam Deck for like 5 hours, and I was immediately like taken in by the game. But I want to set it aside and finish Final Fantasy first.
Shahid, do you ever play Skyrim?
No, but I did get, oh my God, what was, I'm trying to remember, was it Obsidian? There was an earlier version back in the early PS3 days, which I helped to bring onto PS3.
Okay.
And that was, so I have very fond memories of it, but I just never got around to playing it. I would love to play it though, because it seems like my kind of game. I mean, Oblivion,
that's
that
what
was
you're looking
one.
For.
You know what it is? My brain is basically my entire brain, my entire life runs on Obsidian now.
Yeah.
So Obsidian has overridden everything.
Well, I guess one of the reasons, because I do this too, Obsidian is also the name of a developer who made Fallout games for Bethesda, like as part of Bethesda. Right. So like that is I get confused of it too. So.
And also the name of a text editor, but that's.
Well, I think that's what Shahid was referencing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I do. My life runs on Obsidian, right?
It makes it more complicated.
Yeah. So my neural networks got some crossed wires in there. But yeah, so I helped.
You should put that in your second brain, you know?
I probably should, yeah. Yeah, the problem with the second brain, of course, is that it's my first brain that needs help.
Well, it's good. Yeah, and also, once you have the second brain, you just let the first brain take a little break, and then that's when you end up in more problems, but you know.
That's a problem with the second brain.
That's a different podcast.
So yeah, let's get back to this. So I would love to play because it's my kind of game. You cast back your memory several thousand episodes ago. I think I mentioned one of my favorite games of all time was Ultima Underworld. So I loved that game so much that I learned how to read the runes and to do that without having reference to anything written. So that's the kind of game I really love, and I think the entire series by Bethesda would be my type of game, but I know I'd get completely absorbed, so I haven't played it. But yeah, that's really my only sentimental connection to the series. But yeah, I have a friend who plays it absolutely obsessively, still does, and has put in, I don't know, thousands of hours now. I don't know how it keeps on going, but there must be something to it. So Federico, I think I'm going to follow your lead here.
Hmm.
Especially now I've got a decent PC, right?
Yeah, I mean, on a decent, like, I haven't tried this on my Asus laptop with the 4070 inside, but like if it runs, I mean, honestly, the Steam Deck can run at full settings any game from the PS3 for sure, and some games from the PS4. Did you guys see the Horizon port that launched on?
I saw it had launched. Does it run well on Steam Deck?
It runs pretty well on a Steam Deck, and it's remarkable. Like, so I can only imagine that on a proper gaming PC, you can make Skyrim look absolutely bonkers.
Because I've been seeing a lot of people say that like the Horizon port on PC looks just absolutely incredible visually. Because that is a good looking video game, and. You know, with kind of max settings, you can make Horizon look really good.
And I forgot the name of the developer, but the developer who made the Horizon port for PC is, well known for doing excellent work for converting PlayStation titles to PC. So that was good to see. But yeah, you should totally do it, Shahid. Set it up on your gaming PC and have fun.
And maybe I'll go full on and try 700 mods.
Well, good luck.
Shall I talk about what I've been playing?
Yes, please. Yes.
That's a lot more boring than your stuff, but when I say boring, can I just mean a
say,
lot more traditional.
Can I just say for a second, Federico is playing Skyrim right now, so, you know.
Yeah, okay.
That we're not necessarily of the cutting edge completely here, although, you know, we've got Balatro.
Well, if you want to talk about cutting edge, I've actually gone way back into my past for one of the games I've been playing.
Okay.
I missed God of War so much, and I got tired of complaining about it. And then recently, my daughter visited, and she started reminiscing about the PS3. And my wife, being massively organized, was able to produce out of nowhere a box of PS3 games that she had set aside. God knows how she managed to find it, but there it was. It was basically like a pot of gold that you'd completely forgotten about, with all these PS3 classics in there. But the one that stood out that we got all excited about were the remasters of God of War 1 and 2.
Okay.
It came in a single disc. And God of War 1 is one of my top 10 video games of all time. And I missed that so much, and I'd love to see it on PS5. But next best thing was to play it on the PS3. Only problem was, of course, where was our PS3? And so my wife then produced the PS3, which is also hidden away somewhere in the attic. And we had an absolute blast. And all of the feelings that the game induced in us back in the day. I mean, how long ago was it? It was end of 2005, for crying out loud. It was on the PS2, the original, right?
Yeah.
So that's when we played it. My goodness, that is a long time ago. Anyway, all those feelings came back, and we were shouting and screaming, and it felt so visceral. And that's something I really miss from video games today, is that they don't seem to be anywhere near as visceral. And yeah, you could talk about fighting games, but fighting games are very limited in that respect, because yeah, you could do the button bashing thing, but that's not how to play a fighting game well. You know, to play a fighting game well, you need to go beyond that. But this was like, so for example, when you've got a boss battle and you've got to start mashing the O button to rein the boss in, and, you know, the quick time sequence is all good and well, but it's that button mashing that has the balance just right in the original God of War. And even having to strain to open chests with R2 feels wonderful. The only downside, of course, was that the battery in the original controller was more or less dead. It was a DS3, and the rubberized finish had kind of, rubberized finishes kind of decay and become sticky. That had happened. But apparently you can use a DS4 on a PS3. I didn't know this. And depending on how many features the game uses, you can even use it wirelessly. So might be looking a lot more PS3 replays. I just want to briefly touch on the whole thing I was talking about. Not just the visceral aspect, but sorry, go on.
I was going to say, just real quick, because you mentioned about you would wish they would make the game, like, you know, have the game available on PlayStation 5. And it made me think, I would be surprised if they did that, because I feel like now God of War and Kratos is like a very specific thing now for PlayStation. And these games are different, right?
Yeah, completely agree.
And so, like, it would surprise me if they would want to just straight up be like, here you go, here's the originals.
Because no,
there are now people that like, they believe it to be a very specific type of game, and it is not that, right? Like, the original God of Wars are very, very different. So yeah, that was what I wanted to mention. It was just like a random thought that I had of like how sometimes there are some things that once you remake something, remastering something is complicated.
Yeah.
And like, rebooting. And I'm worried a little bit about some of the Zelda stuff that could potentially come in the not too distant future. You know, like, there's a lot of the conversations about like Zelda remakes and remasters and all that kind of stuff, because now there are a lot of people like me who want a very specific thing from a Zelda game, and these wouldn't be that. So
yeah,
it's just an interesting thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I finally sadly gave up on the idea of there ever being a remaster because of the reboot. And that's why I've gone back to the PS3 and I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah. And that's also just fun, right? Get the old PlayStation out.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's the software that does it. Mm-hmm. And it's not far back enough. You know, we've talked about this kind of thing before as well, where you go far back enough and suddenly all the affordances you really want are gone. And the rose-tinted glasses suddenly turn into very clear glasses and the game looks awful and feels awful. And yeah, that is not something that I found to be an issue with the PS3 remaster of God of War 1. So I love that. But yeah, kind of hark back to a time for me when a game was very self-contained. A game was basically the early days of online, so it was more or less canonical, you know?
Yeah.
You start a game, you start to develop your skills for that game. There is minimal or no online component. You master the game, you solve all the big challenges, and you're done with the game. A complete experience. The cover screen, the title screen never changes. There are no various missions. There's no sense of infinity. You know, this game's going to be endlessly expanded and there can be endless DLCs and there's going to be endless seasons with their own missions and their own cover art. It's just one complete canonical game. And one of the reasons we've lost that, of course, is because everything has become much safer. And this is very much like that time when... Do you remember Renderware back in the PS2 days? It was middleware that everybody was using.
Right.
And that created a great deal of creativity in AAA. And then EA bought out Renderware and then that was it. And suddenly we had safety. And we're at that point right now in video games. We're at the top end. We've got a lot of safety because costs are obscene. And that, I think, has contributed to some of the issues with large companies having to scale back. What that means, of course, is that we're not too far from another renaissance and a flowering of great development with great new ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other game I've been playing is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 on the PS5.
You say it so begrudgingly, which is funny to me.
It's kind of like...
It's like, I'm such a normie with my...
I know. It sounds like such a boring thing to say. But I love it so much. This year, I've played all of the Call of Duties again. I played the remaster of 1. I don't know if I played the 2. I might have done. I played the reboot of 1. I played the reboot of 2. And now I'm playing the reboot of 3. And they've all been absolutely glorious. Just my type of game. Everything about it has improved from the previous iteration. The amount of detail... the amount of feedback from the game as well. The DualSense integration is absolutely spectacular. The writing, while never the strongest point, is better. You know, it's acceptable. You don't get utterly bored out of your mind with the writing. It's kind of okay. You know, it's what you'd expect, kind of war film type dialogue. And it works, you know? There's absolutely zero loading, which is the same thing on Modern Warfare 2. There was some loading in Modern Warfare 1,
mm-hmm.
But there's absolutely none of that here. So it just feels seamless, and you just go on and on and on, and discovering new things to learn, new skills. You know, the underwater stuff is good as well. Some of the drone stuff, the helicopter stuff is really good. Sniping is absolutely insanely good. It just feels amazing, especially with their new thermal sights and stuff. It's just a great polished video game.
Very cool. All right, this episode is brought to you by our friends at Hello. Have you ever tried a buckwheat pillow? They're very, very different to fluffy soft pillows in all the best possible ways. A Hollow pillow will support your head and neck exactly how you want it to, unlike traditional squishy soft pillows which collapse under the weight of your head. You might need a stack of pillows and just to try and get some level of comfort. No. With a Hollow pillow, you need just one because it's adjustable. You can add and remove the filling however you like. It's really fantastic. Soft pillows will make your neck fall into a downward bend, which can add uncomfortable pressure to muscles, nerves, and discs. But hollow pillows provide support. I love my hollow pillow. I have slept on a hollow pillow for so many years now. Every single night, I would not trade it in. Whenever I'm away from my pillow, if we're traveling, I always regret it because I absolutely love my hollow pillow. Hollow stays cool and dry. Other pillows are going to absorb and retain body heat and moisture. It makes your pillow feel warm and humid. But buckwheat pillows breathe better, so there's no more flipping to the other side of your pillow. Hollow pillow supports and allows you to keep your head and neck exactly where you want them. People have been sleeping on buckwheat pillows for centuries. They're popular in Japan especially. You might see them at fancy hotels as well on a pillow menu if such a thing was to come into contact with you. Buckwheat is a more natural way to sleep. It's better than a sack of plucked bird feathers or a petroleum-based foam. Hollow pillows are made in the U.S. with quality construction and materials. The certified organic cotton case is cut and sewn for durability, and the buckwheat is grown and milled in the U.S. People love this pillow, which you'll see in the customer reviews, and you can take it from me personally. Remaster listeners can sleep on a hollow pillow for 60 nights, and if it isn't right for you, just ship it back and they'll give you a full refund. Go to hollowpillow.com/remaster, and if you try more than one pillow, you'll get a discount of up to $20 per pillow depending on the size you choose. You can get fast free shipping on every order, and 1% of all profits are donated to the Nature Conservancy. You could also give the gift of better sleep. Hollow is a unique gift for your friends and family that they're going to appreciate and thank you for every night. That is HULLOPILLOW, hollowpillow.com/remaster to try it for 60 days. A thanks to Hollow for their support of this show and Relay FM. Federico, can you tell me what is going on with all of these rumors about a handheld Xbox?
Yeah, Phil Spencer wants one. The problem
is
that
good.
His
That's
company
good.
Needs to make one.
So, I mean, okay, I'm just going to stop there because I will be honest, I'm not super up to this news, but I keep seeing people say things along the lines of Phil Spencer wants one. Phil yeah. Spencer is the CEO of Microsoft Gaming. If yes. he wants one that bad, why doesn't he just tell someone to do it?
He keeps referring to his team as like this entity that's keeping him hostage or something. Like, oh, I want one, but my team. And I'm not sure exactly what the power dynamic is like at Microsoft these days. But okay, so Phil Spencer has been pretty vocal for a while now in terms of saying we want to bring Xbox everywhere, and we have been looking at all this modern generation of handhelds, and we think that it's a great thing, but we need to make Windows better on those devices. He's been pretty open about the fact that he has an ROG Ally, that he has a Lenovo Legion. He seems to be using the Lenovo Legion Go.
How Microsoft of him to have like multiple OEM yeah. partners, you know, yeah. like it's very
You know,
like
these folks, they're giving us money and yeah. now I'm using their consoles. Yeah. but yeah, he seems to be using the Legion Go as his sort of main handheld these days. In any case, in an interview with Polygon, with Chris Plant at Polygon during GDC, the Game Developers Conference, he pretty much said, I brought the Legion Go with me at GDC and I was on a plane and I wanted that device to feel like a portable Xbox, and it kind of felt like one, except, you know, it doesn't feel all the way through like a proper Xbox handheld. And I'm quoting, for example, from the interview, I want to be able to boot into the Xbox app in a full screen, but in a compact mode, and all my social experiences there. Like, I want it to feel like the dash of my Xbox when I turn on the television, except I want it on these devices. And so what Phil Spencer is saying is that you, with this modern generation of PC handhelds, the ROG Ally, the Legion Go, you know, the many devices that Aya Neo makes, or, you know, that One X Player makes, for example, that GPD makes, like all these companies based in China, you can install Windows, and the experience of using Windows on a handheld, it's better than it used to be, but it still kind of sucks compared to a Steam Deck with SteamOS, because you're trying to use a desktop operating system on a tiny screen that doesn't have a mouse, that doesn't have a physical keyboard, and doesn't have the sort of pick up and play nature of a Nintendo Switch or a Steam Deck. And so Spencer has now said multiple times that they are looking at all these new form factors, and they're thinking about it, and they're considering what to do here along two different lines. They're thinking about the hardware, and they're also thinking about the software. So from a software perspective, Microsoft has said for a while that their strategy has been to make Xbox available everywhere, to make every screen that can display computer software an Xbox-capable device. Now, I think this is the most fascinating aspect of the modern Xbox strategy, and why I personally think Xbox has been doing the most interesting work here, especially, you know, compared to Nintendo and PlayStation. This idea of you can purchase an Xbox console and put Xbox games on it, but you can also find those games on PC. And by the way, you can also sign up for a subscription with Game Pass. And if you want to, you can even stream those games on portable devices with Xbox Cloud. So from a software standpoint, I think Microsoft and Xbox have been doing some really interesting work over the past couple of years. But Spencer is also saying that we are now at an inflection point with hardware. And, you know, with this modern generation of handhelds, of course, the Nintendo Switch showed the way 7 years ago. And then the Steam Deck was sort of the other shoe that dropped a couple of years ago. And, you know, he says, now with the power of these mobile chips, and, you know, the advancements that we've seen over the past 2 years, we are now at the point where it's not crazy enough to imagine running a full-on console experience on a handheld.
And also, like, you know, things like DLSS and this exactly. kind of technology too makes it that games can look better without needing the horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I wanted to talk about this because, I mean, just looking straight up at the facts, right? This new generation of handhelds, I mean, even the Steam Deck, so they're all based on AMD architecture. They're all based on the AMD mobile chips. And specifically, the Steam Deck is using this architecture from a couple of years ago with RDNA 2 graphics. RDNA being the name of the GPU architecture that AMD uses in the Ryzen series of graphics card. And in this case, specifically for the APU, which would be the, in the Apple world, an APU would be the equivalent of an SoC, the system on a chip. Here it's called an advanced processing unit, but it's the same idea. It's a chip that has both a CPU and a GPU. Mm-hmm. Now the Steam Deck is a couple of years old at this point. The other handhelds, the ROG Ally, the Lenovo Legion Go, the many handhelds that Aya Neo makes, they make like 20 of them. They're based on a more modern architecture. They're using RDNA 3 graphics, and that have better performance than a Steam Deck. And I'm generalizing here. There are many caveats, but roughly speaking, they do. So AMD has really capitalized the market here with these mobile chips. There's a couple of things that I want to link in the show notes. There's this YouTube creator that I've been following for a few years, The Fox. He's done many technical breakdowns to explain how and why both an Xbox handheld and a PlayStation handheld could be possible. Basically, the gist is it would be possible with the performance level of an Xbox Series S. And Microsoft specifically could leverage the AMD's Zen 4 architecture for the CPU, and they could potentially tap into the so far unreleased RDNA 3.5. Now, there are no 3.5 handhelds on the market yet. Supposedly, it's launching mid-2024. There is no RDNA 4 for mobile yet. And it seems like RDNA 3.5 is going to be the next step before RDNA 4. So currently, the rumors are saying we're going to see RDNA 3.5 this year. And people are expecting a new ROG Ally, for example, based on that architecture in 2024. And RDNA 4 is expected on mobile devices in 2025 to 2026, which is when, realistically, a Steam Deck 2 could launch. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we are witnessing right now a renaissance in the handheld space, right? And Microsoft is paying attention to it. These third-party OEMs are paying attention to it, obviously, and they have products on the market. There is even this new initiative called, did you see this? The Playtron software. So this being this new idea of working with these third-party manufacturers to offer a more user-friendly software than Windows for these handhelds. It's not clear to me if it's based on Android or Linux, but it's called Playtron. It's more of a proof of concept right now. What I think is more interesting is keeping an eye on Linux and Valve specifically. So SteamOS is obviously open source and it's based on Linux. And Valve has said that they would like to work with more companies in the future. But you don't have to wait for Valve to open up SteamOS and allow the ANEOs of this world to make Steam Deck competitors. Right now, you can install SteamOS on a ROG Ally or a Lenovo Legion Go using a couple of open source projects that bring SteamOS and all of the advantages of the SteamOS UI, the pick-up and play nature, like suspend and resume, for example. The most popular one is called Bazite, and there's another one called Nobara. These are effectively Linux distributions that incorporate the SteamOS UI and the ability to switch back and forth between a desktop mode and a gaming mode. Bazite especially looks just like a Steam Deck, but you can install it on a non-Steam Deck device. And so, first of all, I think if Valve really works with third-party companies to license SteamOS and specifically the Steam Deck version of SteamOS for a lower price than Microsoft does with Windows, I think that could be the first potential intriguing development that we could witness over the next year or so. The other, of course, interesting development would be what Microsoft ends up doing. If it's just a software strategy to make Windows look better on small screens for gaming, or if they're actually going to enter the gaming space themselves with the product. And the third aspect, which is where I would love to get Shahid's input on this one and in general on this whole segment, what's going on at PlayStation? Because all they have shown so far is a handheld to stream games from a PS5 in your house. So I think what we're going to see over the next year is, of course, the arrival of the Nintendo Switch 2 within the next 12 months, mm-hmm. hopefully. Maybe whatever Microsoft is going to do, and maybe, I think realistically, the arrival of RDNA 3.5 for better graphics, and maybe what these third-party companies like Asus and Lenovo, what are they going to do as a follow-up to their debut handhelds?
Shade, what do you think?
I don't think PlayStation is in that place anymore. I don't think it's going to make a handheld. I don't think it's in their strategy. I think they were so stung by the Vita experience.
Yeah.
And the fracturing of software availability and therefore opportunity cost perceived by third parties, as well as first party, by the way, which, of course, we know they've cut down on considerably. And I think any of those factors lend any support to the idea that they might ever, well, I say ever, ever's a long time, right? But certainly in the near to midterm future, I just don't think it makes sense for them. The whole marketplace for these portable devices is entirely predicated on the availability of good software. And of course, the biggest problem for the Vita, which was PlayStation's last foray into the portable space, and what happened there? What happened was a fragmentation of the software. It meant that
when people at large third parties made the considerations about which platforms to support, they looked at Vita as a new hardware platform entirely separate from PlayStation. At that time, it was a PS3, of course, which is already having its own issues due to its unique architecture. You know, if you're spending a lot of money on a version of your game, you're going to go to where the units are.
But what about a scenario where it's running PlayStation 5 games?
That's different.
Because I feel like that's the only scenario. Like, it's the only scenario. That there is even a conversation about, oh, we're going to have another platform. Like, they're not going to make the PSVR 2 kind of mistake or whatever that I think they may have made. I feel like if they were going to do anything, and it seems like, Ferrico, correct me if I'm wrong, the conversation is around that idea with all of these companies that, like, oh no, this is just the mobile quote unquote versions of the games you're playing on our main consoles or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very expensive, but one of the things that's changed in the market is that people are absolutely fine with spending upwards of £500 or $500 on a handheld device. That just wasn't the case before. You know, when the Vita came out, it was considered a very expensive platform, even though, given the hardware, given the technology, it wasn't really. But the reason people are prepared to pay a lot more is, first of all, because there's the technology bias. People like high-tech stuff. There is a market for that. They like the very best technology in a portable form factor. And then the other thing, of course, is availability of software. Mm. So I was quite happy to buy a Steam Deck, even though it didn't offer me any technological benefit over anything I already had, simply because it would have played the 1,000 plus games in my Steam library. Well, obviously not all of them, but enough of a subset that made it useful. And it's the same with all these other devices. And so when Phil Spencer talks about an Xbox that you can play anywhere and on any device, I wouldn't say he's being disingenuous, but it's a completely different type of problem than the one PlayStation were trying to solve many years ago. Because now, of course, what he's talking about is the Xbox software experience. He's not talking about a piece of technology, because the technology problem has been solved and proven by Steam with Steam Deck. What he's talking about is being able to play their catalog on any device. And so the hardware becomes almost irrelevant. We're talking about the software. We're talking about the Xbox ecosystem. And all this stuff he's talking about is, you know, he wants to see his socials and all of that. I know. I don't think that's why people play a portable device. And they're not really worried about the entire Xbox app experience.
No, they want their games.
They want their games, yeah. Right? And so the cross-save stuff he's talking about makes complete sense. Being able to play the games, particularly the Game Pass stuff. And when I say Game Pass, I mean like some of the EA Replay stuff, but obviously the Xbox first party. Of course they want to play that on their devices. And right now that's not trivial to do. I mean, Federico's the expert in this area because he's obviously tried all that. But
even on a Steam Deck, it's like possible, but not great. Like I haven't done it because I really don't want to go through the aggravation. Like I know it can be done.
Yeah,
but I would love to be able to download, that's the key part for me, download Xbox Game Pass games onto my Steam Deck. And so like I would love Microsoft to offer this. And I do feel like of the companies we're discussing here, I think PlayStation is a question mark. Like as you said, I'm just not sure what their strategy is. And I actually think maybe they don't know right now. Like that would not surprise me if PlayStation seem a little bit rocked at the moment, right? Like they had the live service stuff, and left, right, and center they're canceling live service games. I know a bunch of smart people over there. They're pivoting. I expect they are pivoting a bit. So who knows where they might end up?
Right now, their focus is PS5 Pro.
Yeah, exactly. But what are the games on the PS5 Pro? I think like that is it seemed like they were going in a direction content wise. Which maybe they're not going to hit on as hard. I don't know. It seems like the live service stuff is complicated, especially because then you've got something like Helldivers, which is blowing up, right? And is continuing. So, yeah, like, it all feels complicated right now. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is not one of the games. I'm sure that PlayStation were like, all right, here we go. Live service. Hold on, everyone. Helldivers. Like, that's not what they were.
No, no.
But what it has ended up showing is, like, actually, oh, you just make a good game. Like, that's still what it is. Like, you've got to have good games. But to come back to the main topic of our conversation, I do feel like, personally, Microsoft is the most likely to do this because they have, I feel like, the most to gain and the less to lose. Because a handheld console fits perfectly into their strategy. Give people as many screens to play on as possible. And it also, from a hardware perspective, could be really interesting for them. I feel like they could sell a significant amount of a handheld Xbox. I think that there are a lot of players who would... Like, I would prefer a handheld Xbox to an Xbox.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I would prefer that.
And I would prefer a handheld Xbox to a comparable handheld by Lenovo or Asus.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I would totally buy, like, a Series S that I can carry around. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no question.
It would be fantastic. Yeah. Like, that would be... I mean, honestly, the Steam Deck kind of makes me feel like I would like all my consoles that way, but... I do still like to be able to play my PlayStation games specifically at the highest quality available to me, right? Because by and large, what I like on PlayStation is that exact type of game. Like, I wanted to be able to have the option to play Spider-Man handheld, but it would have been a shame to only experience that game handheld.
So what I think happened there is that I do think that over the past 7 years with the Nintendo Switch, I think the Switch rewired our brains.
Yes.
In the sense that it created in the minds of gamers, this idea that didn't exist before of I can sit down and in front of the TV and play a game, and then I can walk away and be in bed, on the couch, on the toilet, well, like whatever. I can be wherever and continue playing the same game. And that didn't exist before. And then in 2017, it began existing. And ever since, that expectation has only grown stronger. And in a way, like, the Steam Deck was the final straw, because that showed it's not just Nintendo games, now it's PC games. And so I think that's why sort of the tide has really shifted here in a way that a lot of people, I think, would now be comfortable with the idea of, I would trade, maybe, you know, I think a lot of people would say, I would be fine with having PS4 performance for a console that can be both hooked up to the TV and played in handheld, then be limited to just a console with PS5 graphics, but I can only play it on the TV.
Yeah, I would feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't.
But then the good part of it, though, is don't only make that, right?
Well, the thing is, I don't think PlayStation is in that place anymore. There was a period of huge excitement. There was the impetus to save themselves. That was a hugely traumatic experience. You know, the turning point between PS3 and PS4 was a huge turning point, because if PS4 had been a flop, that was not just the end of PlayStation, it was the end of Sony.
Yeah,
it was one of the biggest turning points in their history. Now, when you've gone through that as a company, you become extremely fearful of taking such a big risk again.
Your culture changes after an event like that.
Completely. And you can see that almost everything they've done since the success of PS4 became entrenched is to become more conservative and to redraw their boundaries a bit narrower, to focus on revenue, to focus on profitability, to focus on a core offering that centers around their experience. Remember this kind of analogy I coined a few years ago, that Xbox is like Netflix, Nintendo is like Disney, but PlayStation is like cinema. They've entrenched. They've become more cinematic. Their first-party games are a lot more cinematic. This is why I love them on the big telly. This is why I play Modern Warfare and all of the, and obviously Spider-Man, which you made me play, and I don't regret a second of that, on a big telly on my PS5. And I wouldn't want those amazing experiences on the small screen. Whereas the world has shifted to a much more Netflix model. In other words, a much more Game Pass model. And you see people watching Netflix shows on 6.7-inch mobile screens everywhere. Doesn't bother them in the slightest. And so I think the same thing very much applies to video games now. That has become a part of, well, it's fallen in line with Xbox's strategy of having that content available just about every place. I would really like it if they introduced this device, but also allowed us to play Steam games. In other words, they didn't officially support Steam, but it wasn't such a closed device that you couldn't install Steam if you wanted it to. Because right now, for example, I find the Steam Deck a lot more limiting. I would junk the Steam Deck in a heartbeat if I could, you know, reasonably easily sideload Steam onto an Xbox portable while still having my Xbox app-based stuff as well.
You can do that the other way around, but it's not as simple.
Right. I'm saying make it simple. Yeah. I mean, I haven't done it, right? If I want to play an Xbox game on another device, but the only other device I'll play it on, if I'm forced to, is a PC.
Yeah.
But why bother when I've got an Xbox X sitting on the same telly as my PS5?
Yeah.
Right? So this goes back to your point.
Xbox games are streaming, though. Like, that's on a Steam Deck, if you do that. Which is, I also don't like that. But.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that I wouldn't want that at all.
Yeah.
I want the full experience.
But yeah, I do feel like it's hard. I think it's a harder sell to imagine PlayStation doing this. Like, it is a harder sell. I think it's an easier sell to imagine Microsoft doing this. I feel pretty confident that they will do this. I don't know how long it would take them. But, you know, if you look at Microsoft, they have multiple competitors, like, depending on what you're looking at. And Steam is a big competitor, is only becoming a bigger competitor for them. I can imagine them wanting to say, like, oh, hang on a minute, we can try that too. And I think it would be of great value to Microsoft and to Xbox, and also to, because I believe they care about this, to the Xbox gamer, because there is continued consternation about what is the future of the Xbox gaming platform and consoles. And I think that it could be a good win for them to be like, not only are we committed to consoles, we've made another one, right? There's three of them now. And I think that would be a great success for them. I'd certainly know I would want it.